Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, I'm Jan Kepler, and this is Two Voices, One Journey.
And hi, I'm Frank Kudla. This is the place to be when you want to hear two extraordinarily ordinary people talk about things that interests them. Anyway, so we took a week off, and we're back now. A couple of things have happened. We're not going to cover the big item in the news, so we're just going to skip that. It's too incendiary. We spent last weekend, rather than recording our podcast, we spent last weekend watching Formula One and watching the U.S. Open Tennis Championships in New York. And it was pretty interesting. The men's final was extremely good. Alcaraz beat Sinner, and it did that in four sets. And then also Arena Sabalenka defended her title on the women's side. So those were really kind of expected outcomes there. Big surprises there were $38 drinks.
Yeah.
It's a new one. It's a watermelon spritzer or something.
I don't know. I think they had something where they had like melon balls in it.
Yes.
To look like tennis balls. The straw
yes.
was
yeah.
through it. Yeah.
It's a watermelon. And it was $38 for a single drink. Of course, just the grounds passes. It's not seating in the grandstand or the main stadium. It were $450 early in the week. I don't know what they were, what seats were towards the finals.
It is the place to be seen.
Oh, I mean,
there's just so many celebrities, fashion people. Anna Wintour was there like every day with some new celebrity guy at her side. So it was it's good people watching too.
It is. It's kind of like a Lakers game, or at least back in the days when Diane Cannon and Jack Nicholson. Not Jack Nicholas, that's the golfer. But
no, he was probably there too.
He might have been. Yeah, he might have been. There was not some controversy, but some discussion about the number of sets that they play. The men play the best of five sets in the slams.
Yeah.
The women play the best of three. And I just thought it was funny because it was Diana Nyad said that I know something about endurance. If a man can play five sets, so can a woman. She's the one that swam from Cuba to Florida without a shark tank. That movie that was with Jodie Foster.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a little story. I
mean, right.
She said, I know something about endurance.
Right, okay.
And she certainly does. She swims.
Well, she does, but she's not normal, so
I don't think these girls playing tennis are actually normal either.
Well, probably not, but five sets, that's hours and hours of
play. Those men's matches, I mean, even when I think the men's match ran over 3 hours, and that was only four sets.
Right.
They only played four sets.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So also over the course of this past week, I learned something new in the zoological sphere, and that's that a group of flamingos is called the flamboyants, which seems so very appropriate.
It does. It definitely does. Makes me think of South Beach, Miami.
Yes.
Very much so. Pink the pink flamingos. And then, of course, you know that a group of crows... is a murder.
Is a murder, yes.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a bunch of those things. I think in the one of the bathrooms we have a completely useless.
Oh, yeah. The book of useless knowledge. Yes. That's
and
why.
Those are the type of things that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's where all our talking points come from, probably the bathroom.
Yeah. I wrote on LinkedIn this sort of a management technique that I just found sort of interesting the way it flows off my tongue, but it was basically give your team something to believe in. If you can't do that, give them hope. If you can't do that, give them something to do. And I believe that came from the movie The Flight of the Phoenix. I believe Jimmy Stewart was in the original one. Dennis Quaid was in the one from 1982. But that's where the cargo plane carrying passengers crashes in the desert,
mm-hmm.
and and there's no hope of rescue because they're in the middle of nowhere. They're, the first one, they were in the Sahara Desert. The second one, they were in China, in the Gobi Desert.
Okay.
And they get stranded, and they're all kind of just giving up. So the captain, the Jimmy Stewart character, decides what we're going to do is we'll take the parts from this plane, and we'll build a smaller plane. Mostly it was just to give them something to do.
Yeah, well, and also to focus on.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you would just worry about stuff or stew about things, not knowing what was going on. No, that's smart.
Yeah, when times are times are bad, you got to keep everybody busy. So if you can't give them any hope, just give a job.
That's right.
Go sweep the floor. Do
that's
something.
Right. You should do the laundry, Frank.
Yes, I should do the laundry.
You should. Okay.
Well, I'm an invalid. But in other news, I don't know what you think about this, but we now have a Department of War again.
Was that sigh audible?
Yeah,
that
was an audible
good,
sigh.
Okay, good, because that's exactly what I meant.
Yeah, I guess technically they can't change the name without an act of Congress, but right. They basically can take all the signs down and
They were jackhammering the signs off the walls and everything. I mean, it's a nickname, for God's sake.
It's a nickname. Well, they're changing.
Are they going to change a stationery now?
Oh. Yeah, they're actually, the cost of the name change.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because they're doing this around the world. Wherever we have an office...
The
Department of Defense is now the Department of War, and they're spending $1 billion to do this. I mean, we're supposed to be so frugal, we're supposed to be so worried about the deficit and the debt.
Wow.
We're spending $1 billion to change the stationery and take down some signs that'll last for 3 years, so the next president comes in and says...
Right, and we have poverty and homelessness and inflation, but now we've got new stationery.
Yeah, I can't think of a...
That's frivolous.
That is extremely...
Pardon me, that's bullshit. Now we're in explicit, sorry.
Yeah, no, and even putting aside what bullshit it is... It's actually a dumb move. I mean, the Department of Defense makes a lot more sense. We're defending ourselves. We're not supposed to be warmongers.
No.
I mean, we're not a colonial power anymore.
Well, if we're, you know, rooting for the Nobel Peace Prize, then, you know, I don't know. This seems kind of counterproductive, but...
Yeah, it does.
I don't know. It's, you know, it's taking something and slapping it on the table and saying yours is bigger.
So last Thursday... And I think into early Friday, Larry Ellison was the richest person in the world.
Oh, over Elon?
Over Elon.
Hmm.
Oracle stock was up 36%. They signed a big deal with OpenAI. They're going to do the hardware side for OpenAI.
Not Microsoft.
No.
Okay.
No, it was OpenAI. Huh. I don't know. Microsoft must be involved somewhere.
Yeah, I would think so.
They have a $10 billion investment in OpenAI.
I thought that they might have had some hardware, but who knows? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't think that lasted very long, did it? Isn't Elon back up to the richest dude?
I think so. I think you mentioned it. I didn't really check it, but you had mentioned that you thought that Elon had taken it back. But Elon will definitely get it by the end of next year if his new pay package goes through. Did you see they're offering him something over, I don't know how many years it is, but it amounts to $1 trillion.
Is it for him to not show up to work?
No, it's for him to just to knock it off with political stuff.
And actually work,
yeah.
Oh, okay, well, that makes sense. I'd read somewhere that Tesla wants to get out of cars.
Yes, I believe that's true. They're very interested in the... robotics, batteries and robotics is what they're very interested in. They have not done anything with their cars in quite some time. They launched that Model 3.
But you can't tell that from a 2 or a 1 or a 5.
I don't know how many years ago that was.
Yeah.
And then the truck was the launch, which was just an exercise in...
That, regardless of what you think of the company or of Elon, that truck is just stupid.
Yeah, yeah. And it's insanely ugly. But, so I'm skipping over the next next topic. Did you want to talk about, you had some things to talk about. I don't know if you wanted to jump into that, because I just wanted to talk a little bit about AI anxiety. And, I'm reading two kind of apocalyptic. One's a book and one's a magazine article, but I'll save that for the end so we can end on a downer.
Why not just do it now? I mean, the whole thing's pretty much a wait till you hear what I have to say. I mean, really, everybody just, you know, turn us off right now. Save yourself.
Yeah. No, well, I'll save it too after we, let's talk about your stuff.
Okay. Frank and I do research independently, independent of one another, and sometimes we'll research each other's topics, and, you know, we always comment on stuff and everything, and we talk a lot in our spare time, obviously, but I've just kind of have a feeling about a couple of things, and so you're okay if I say it?
You're a co-host. I'm a co-host. This is our platform.
Okay.
And it's very likely nobody's listening.
It's true. I know. I think they probably aren't. So this is good. Okay. Away. Here we go. I like to call it the dawn of the con. And by that, I do mean a reference to the mafia and to con artists. Okay. In my opinion, and from what I've been reading, and I do believe, the current administration is suppressing economic debate. They're silencing opposition with threats of retaliation, whether it's political, business-wise. I mean, Trump telling the CEO of Walmart when the CEO brought up the topic of the tariffs possibly affecting prices for consumers, and Trump telling him basically, we'll just eat the tariffs. You know, it's just...
Well, Trump's a brilliant businessman, and he wrote The Art of the Deal. And
but I don't think he actually wrote it, but you know. Yeah, okay.
I read it, and I knew it wasn't him.
Yeah.
But that was quite some time ago. But, I mean, it's not only are they trying to control the narrative, but they're also trying to control the numbers, too. I mean, firing the person, the woman at the BLS, because he didn't like her numbers.
Right.
Of course, they came out this month with numbers that were even worse.
Which then I don't know how many people you can possibly fire or go through or whatever, but I mean, it's just... not being able to have a conversation about what's going on with with the economy, an honest conversation, that's very concerning, because I don't think necessarily the brightest bulbs are burning in the White House when it comes to some of these ideas and concepts. They haven't necessarily been completely thought through. So suppressing economic debate, this to me is mafioso type stuff. The state-directed capitalism, which is basically the government taking financial positions or payments from publicly traded private sector companies. To me, that's it's like a tribute that you'd pay into somebody to stay in their good graces. And I mean, in the past, it would be like there'd be loans or there'd be tax credits or, you know, things like that, or subsidies that the government would provide private industry to encourage growth in certain areas or whatever. But in this case, they're just flat out payments to the U.S. Treasury. Now, I'm not saying that that definitely, you know, or absolutely enriches the current administration, but you're asking, you're making these arrangements in the public space. And those kinds of arrangements are affecting competition.
Well, it's coercion. In the case of companies like Apple, who have agreed to invest $600 billion in plants in, I guess, in Texas, otherwise Trump is going to destroy their business with tariffs.
Right.
I mean, it is coercion.
Yeah.
It's not bribery. What's the other word?
Oh, it's extortion.
Extortion. Yes.
It is absolutely.
Which I believe is a crime.
I believe it is too, or at least it used to be. But anyway, the one of the concerns that folks have been reading about have is that this is going to change the entrepreneurial spirit, and that companies, instead of innovating for the consumers and consumer, they're going to be focusing on what's going to get them political benefits or appease the current administration or curry favor, sort of thing. I don't know. I have a problem with that. So to me, that, you know, suppressing really economic free speech, if you ask me, getting involved in state-directed capitalism, and getting these tributes paid, and it is to the U.S. economy, you know, to the U.S. Treasury. I'll say there is that, but it's the other thing is the deals that Donald Trump likes to strike, and this is the con part, the con artist part. And basically, he has these deals for revenue sharing where he can tell leading American companies to pay the Treasury a couple billion bucks and they'll go ahead and approve a merger, or they'll give them market access, like NVIDIA, you can sell your chips to whoever, or we'll, you know, provide regulatory relief. And really, it is coercion, extortion, I think, whatever you want to call that. And he does these things in this flamboyant way that, you know, to get the headlines, that he's got these fabulous revenue sources, and that he's claiming everybody else is paying for it except the American people. It's like his constituents aren't paying for it. Everybody else is. The Mexico will pay for the wall. Tariffs are paid by foreign countries, and the money is pouring into the United States. You know, two things that we know weren't true. And it's the same thing with the investment in private sector businesses. It ultimately is a tax on corporations. It's ultimately a tax on the American people. And I just...
Well, I mean, the capitalism is based on free enterprise.
Right.
Although the Chinese certainly are putting up a different model. But the model of taking a position in companies is very much like Chinese capitalism.
Right.
Where the government controls it and they're not really profit driven. But I one thing I do want to point out, though, the Intel deal where they're taking a position in Intel of, what, 10 or 15%?
Yeah, I think.
Something like that. We didn't buy into it. That was a conversion of the CHIPS Act money into equity. So there wasn't, we didn't take any money out of our pocket. They already had the money. They owed us the money from the CHIPS Act.
Oh, from the CHIPS Act,
which was a Biden CHIPS Act. So he converted that and said, you don't, the terms of that are over if you give us 10% of
right.
The company.
And in the case of these deals, I'm not saying the American people are digging into their pockets and providing money for it. I'm just saying down the road, the cost to appease the government, who are the political powers, those costs are going to be built into the services or the products that are provided to us as Americans, and we'll end up paying for it.
Oh,
I believe that's my belief. I don't think, you know, we're being asked to, you know, chip in for 10% of Intel, but I just think it's the cost of entrepreneurial thinking, and then ultimately boiling down, just like with the tariffs, we're going to end up paying for it.
Oh, there's no question about that. They just haven't kicked in yet because they haven't been really firmly solidified. I don't know how many deals have actually been signed, sealed, and delivered. So we're still waiting to work those out. And you were telling me that China's at 30% until November 9th or...
Right. They got the second reprieve, the second 90-day reprieve goes until November 9th. And then after that, theoretically, it could go back up to 154 or more or something different.
That'll be...
we don't know.
That'll be pretty painful.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sorry about being a downer.
No, you're not a downer. I just get the impression... You're not a fan of President Trump's political policies or his way of doing business.
I'd say I don't have high regard for him with his economic policies.
Yeah,
and I think it's, in my opinion, in what he's doing now, and then also his track record as a businessman is not good.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's good you got that off your chest.
Yes, it is. I'll shut up now. Okay. I'll play with a cat.
She needs to be played with.
I know. She won't get off the table.
Yeah. So the two things I wanted to talk about were just one is AI anxiety, just the concern about it. We talked about it. We talked about the AI bubble last time we were on. And I think our very first episode, we talked about the apocalyptic robots taking over the world.
Oh, we were all gloomy and doom about that.
Well, I had read the book, Our Last Great Invention.
Because it was going to kill us. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Which it still might if it works out.
Probably.
But I'm reading another book called The Great AI Con, I believe it is. And it's just talking about the hype around it. And that the people that are telling you what it can do, or what they think it can do, are the people that are benefiting from the hype. If OpenAI makes a big deal about something and says, oh my gosh, we're going to have robots that are going to mow your lawn and whatever, that's exciting. And guess what happens? Money flows into to the AI companies.
Yeah.
And so all the AI companies are really hyping all this stuff. And it's still very impressive. What we have with this agentic AI is very impressive. The things like Microsoft's Copilot, what's the one I use? Claude from Anthropic.
Right.
Is very good for writing, creating images, and just having a general conversation about
something. Oh, it definitely serves a purpose. It's going to be a huge benefit. I just don't think we're going to be taken over and
probably not anytime soon.
Ground up as food or fuel or whatever for them in the next year or two.
Yeah. But I think the long-term damage is probably a little bit less of a concern than the current damage. Like, I mean, the deep fakes synthetic reality.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just, I mean, I can't tell when something's real or not anymore when I see a picture.
No, when you did those pictures of us for, I think it was probably for the website or whatever, it's just like, oh my God, those are good. And no, I haven't looked like that for 20 years. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's basically what I asked it to do, was just de-age us by a decade or so. But anyway, the general misinformation that it gives because of the hallucinations, and because it has to answer the question, has to have some kind of an answer, no matter whether it's right or wrong.
Right.
It makes up stuff like that.
And then I think also, too, to your point, it's just with all the hype, we're giving it more credibility than it deserves, or it's earned yet.
Yes.
So we're just automatically assuming it's either right, or it's going to take over, or it's smarter, or whatever, so which isn't not necessarily the case.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and there is some job displacement going on right now. Actually,
what's
really going on, it's not so much people getting fired, it's people not being hired. Because
the people
that they have, they're making more efficient, more productive, and so they don't need people. I feel really awful for kids that are getting out of school with computer degrees. They want to be coders or something like that. That's one thing this does really well is code.
Yeah.
And fix it. So, I mean, if I spend 4 or 6 years in school and get out and find out, your job no longer exists.
Right, yeah.
That category of job. And you could have gone into school 4 years ago when it still looked like that was a viable job. I mean, in Silicon Valley, they were paying people big dollars.
Oh, yeah, now they pay millions of dollars if you can do AI stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of wild. Plus AI, the algorithms that push information to your social media feeds that are, you know, used by Facebook and Instagram, and those two are basically the same, I guess. But but it's having an impact on children too. What show were we watching? Was it Jon Stewart's show last week that topic came up? Not with Charlie Sheen, but with the host. I think there was some. If it wasn't that show. It was some other show.
It was Bill Maher.
Oh, it was Bill Maher.
Yeah. You said Jon Stewart.
It was Bill Maher.
Yeah.
But they were just they were talking about the impact on kids and related to the big news that's in the headline.
Yeah,
right
it's
now,
just so. Taking social media and making it worse.
Yes. Yeah, it's destroying it. I mean, it's turning it into something that's very dangerous.
Yeah.
But there's a thing called Amara's Law. And what that is we tend to overestimate the short-term effects of new technology while underestimating its long-term impact. So we overestimate what this can do, oh my goodness, and then we miss the big picture, which is what it's really going to end up doing.
Right.
So I'm still scared shitless of AI. I mean, I'm using what we've got, but I have to watch Will Smith and iRobot again.
Yeah, all the unintended consequences.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Or watch 2001. That was the first one with AI.
Was it Hal?
Yeah, with Hal. Oh, Hal 5000 or whatever he
that
was.
That movie was so boring. I remember seeing that.
It had an intermission.
It did have an intermission because it was so damn long. It was 3 hours.
Yeah.
Which nowadays, that's like Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible.
Yeah. That could have used an intermission. But,
I found 2001 kind of entertaining. I mean, it was a long thing to sit through. But they were moving in slow motion the whole time, too. So if the movie was sped up to regular speed, like Earth speed.
Right, yeah.
Because they were kind of slow in the space suits and the space capsule and getting around to simulate the zero gravity, I guess, is what Kubrick was trying to do.
I like the other one better. It was space with, the kind of shortish guy with the dark hair.
Sam Rockwell?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's the moon.
Oh, moon, yeah. Moon. That was good.
Oh, that was very good.
I was prepared for that to be horrible, I'm sorry, like 2001. I thought, well, this is going to be a total snooze, but that was good. That was a very good movie.
No, and it was very good, very well acted, and it had a real plot. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you kind of discovered it. You started to suspect it.
Yeah.
And it just led you along, and then, oh, my gosh.
But it wasn't all slow-mos of the people going to the cupboard and opening it up or whatever. Okay.
No.
Okay.
No. So, two things I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
One is, what is it called? The end. I think it's called The End of Everything. There's also an article in the BBC Science Journal this month's journal that and it's titled something similar to The End of Everything. But anyway, just listen to this when you worry about whether the robots are going to take over. The Earth, our Earth has seen 5 major extinction events. Dinosaurs were one of them, whatever that one was called.
Okay.
Many scientists, a lot of scientists believe that we're now working on our 6th, that we're starting on our 6th.
Okay.
Because the number of species going extinct. Now, the number of species that have gone extinct far exceeds any that exist now.
Right.
I mean, that's evolution.
Yeah, turnover.
But it's somewhere between 100 and 1,000 times, I know that's a big range, greater than that background noise, the rate that we should be losing species at. We're now losing them 100 to 1,000 times at a faster pace.
Oh, okay.
So we're killing them off. And we're one of those animals. So it hasn't quite gotten to us yet, but who knows?
Oh, we'll get to ourselves eventually, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, we certainly have the capability with our weaponry to do it. But most of those problems are caused by human activity, too. Now, the previous events, I mean, the dinosaurs were an asteroid.
Yeah,
there were climate change. There was an ice age.
Yeah.
I should really research what all the other...
No, I know. Well, I mean, just like there's climate change now, it doesn't have to be human created.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it's not contributed to it, but...
Yeah, I think it definitely contributes to it.
It probably does, but I just think that, you know, nothing's static.
Yeah. Well, this Holocene period that we're in, a couple of things that are going on. Pollution, particularly in the sea, is a major problem.
Yep, yep.
Climate change is a problem, whether it's man-made or not.
No, I know that. Ocean warming and
climate change is going on.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I don't know how much we can adapt to it, how big an air conditioner we can build. And I don't know when... I know they think we're going to hit the tipping point by 2030 or 2035 or
really? Somewhere,
but it's too late. I mean, I know 12 years ago they told us it was going to be 12 years from now. It was too late. Now they're talking.
It's like next week?
Yeah. Well, I think the original.
Well, we're going to blow our savings then and go do something.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was coming up that soon. Okay.
Well, yeah, I think it is actually supposed to be, but they keep making changes to that. And
Y2K was supposed to happen too, and that didn't. So.
Oh, that was a moneymaker for some people.
Yeah, I had a battery-operated radio. I had a propane little oven thing. Since I lived up in the Bay Area when I was working for a .com. So, yeah, fun times. And I was waiting, and I was watching TV, and I was watching, you know, like the... New Year's Eve shows from around the world, just waiting for, you know, like the lights that, you know, start going off across Beijing and then across this continent, everything's gone dark. And it's just like, doink, nothing.
Yeah, nothing happened.
Yep.
But, well, the company I was with at the time went through a nearly 7-figure software upgrade.
Oh, you bet.
So, I mean,
the
software engineers were making a ton of money on it from like 1995 until 2000.
Oh yeah, I mean it was the race because nothing could click past 1999.
Right,
and so everything was good. Like the ATMs weren't going to work.
Yeah.
It was like the apocalypse.
Yeah,
yeah. I wonder what software dude started that.
Yeah. Well, other problems with this are helping contribute to this extinction event that we're in right now is over exploitation, and that's hunting and harvesting. We're just pulling in. I think Japan still does whales, but we're just taking too much out of the environment, and just new species can't evolve in a human lifetime. So we're depopulating by overexploiting. And then the other one I hadn't given much thought to was invasion of
non-native species.
Yeah. Yes, non-native species. And I know there's, I mean, pythons in the...
In the Everglades.
In the Everglades.
Right.
Like that, but
kudzu in the south.
Yeah, kudzu in the south. One of the really classic examples of this is the brown tree snake that's in Guam. That was introduced to Guam from Australia in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And it eliminated 3 species of birds. Because they knew nothing about the snake, and the snake knew something about eating birds. And
were apparently good at it.
And they were very effective at it within a matter of a couple of years.
Wow.
There were 3 species that were completely eliminated from the face of the earth.
Those were the dumb ones.
Yeah, well, yeah. They were like the moss that didn't change color in London.
There you go.
Yeah. That's a good example of evolution.
And that really is, and especially quick evolution, too, because that was caused by all the soot and smoke from the industry making the skies black.
The trees turned black.
The skies, everything was black. So in order to be camouflaged, you had to be dark.
Yes.
So only the dark ones could survive.
Yeah, if you're a light-colored moth sitting on a traditional birch tree, you're basically invisible.
Yeah.
But if that birch tree turns black,
yep,
you just stand out.
There you go. A bird gets you.
Yep. So on a similarly apocalyptic note, I also read that the universe's expansion may be slowing. Since 1920, it's been commonly believed by scientists, by astrophysicists, that the universe is expanding. From the time of the Big Bang, it's expanding. It was discovered sometime mid-century, last century, that expansion is actually accelerating, which there's some mathematics that can't explain that. It has something to do with dark energy, not dark matter, but with dark energy. And that dark energy is decelerating now. If it decelerates the universe enough, if we stop accelerating the expansion, it's like taking your foot off the gas pedal in a car. You can still be accelerating, but you're accelerating slower. Mm-hmm. Gravity can win. And what we'll be in is this loop where at some point we won't expand anymore. Gravity wins and we have an implosion. Mm. Just the opposite of the Big Bang. Huh. Everything just all comes
just collapses.
Back. Yes.
Wow.
Now, we're dealing on a scale that is unimaginable by human standards. I mean, we're talking the universe is almost 14 billion years old or 13 billion years old. And the Earth is only 4 billion years old. And we've only had written history for...
Yeah, the robots are going to get us first, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the robots will get here, yes. So there's still a legitimate concern.
But they'll get crushed in the end, well, so that's good. Serves them right.
Yeah, they're going to get crushed or they get burned by the sun, unless they're smart enough. I mean, if they're really that smart, they might figure out a way. And a robot can travel through space for a very long time.
Oh, they don't breathe. They don't eat.
They don't breathe. They don't eat.
They don't poop.
No. So they can, and they can tolerate high Gs. They can tolerate very high G levels. That's
well, don't give them any ideas because they're listening.
I just spelled it out for them.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great. Okay.
They're going to train
There's
the
a fall of civilization brought to you by Francis Kudla.
Well, what they're going to do is they'll train their AIs off of our podcast.
Well, for sure we're going to survive that then.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. So anyway.
Are you listening to anything interesting?
I am actually listening to something very interesting. I mentioned it to you and actually, I wanted to get your narrative on one part of this. But I just finished listening to Lady Gaga's sixth studio album. It's called Mayhem. And I'm absolutely here for it. I mean, this is classic Lady Gaga energy, but with a little bit more polished, a mature sound that shows her incredible evolution as an artist. I mean, there's no more meat suits. I mean, she's really... I always thought she was a serious artist.
I think she always has been. I think she did some of that stuff because she felt like she needed to.
Yeah.
Or she had to. She's incredibly talented.
Yeah. Well, on this album, she does two collaborations with Bruno Mars, who we both like.
Yeah.
One of them is called... what the heck is that one called? Die with a Smile.
Oh, okay.
And,
is that the Dead Walk or something?
No, that one's... let's see, that one is something else. It's called The Dead Dance.
The Dead Dance. That's the one with the creepy dolls.
That's with the creepy dolls. Yeah. That's the one that was directed by Tim Burton.
Tim Burton, yeah. And it totally looks, like you said,
like Tim Burton.
Burton-esque.
It's a very good dance. It's a very good video.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, she does her usual dancing in it. And on a sexist note, I have to say, she looks really good. A couple of years ago when she did the Super Bowl halftime show, she had a little bit of a belly on her. She had a little flab hanging over her shorts. And
what?
She's a young woman. I mean, I can show you.
Oh, my God.
It's on YouTube.
I don't care. I mean, wow, how picky.
Yeah, it's being very, very sexist. But anyway, that's no longer the case. So she's gotten engaged and she's in shape. So good for her. But I wanted to talk about, I wanted you to just talk about it, if you still have recollections of it. I do. It was our Lady Gaga experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was fun. I mean, we went and saw her. I don't know. Was it Staples? Probably it's Staples. Oh, no, Kodak? Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was somewhere in Los Angeles. And we were, you know, like, we were the people that were dropping off the kids that were going to the show, but we ended up going to the show. And because we were totally the oldest people there.
Oh, and we were definitely underdressed.
Yeah. Oh, God. Because it was like cosplay.
Yeah.
Everybody. It was very interesting. I mean, in a lot of costumes. So, yeah, we just looked like total nerds stuck out. But the main thing that got us was the noise level. it was so loud that the thumping and stuff is your, it vibrates your sternum.
Yes.
And we love her and we think she's great. And we love her up close too. And her dances and all that kind of stuff. And you know, it was a small little stage. So she was far away. We couldn't see her, but the music was so loud. I know we had to leave.
We left. I think we made it through maybe 45 minutes.
I know. But I mean, I tell you, it's really, it was like, it makes your chest hurt. It was, I know.
It was just a very uncomfortable, almost nauseating feeling.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was funny when we were there standing in the lobby looking at everybody else. And they must have been looking at us like, boy, these people
are
weird.
Yeah. Or it's like, are you here to pick somebody up?
Yeah.
I mean, the concert hasn't even started yet, folks. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. That was, it was an interesting cultural experience. But she's very talented.
Yeah. That's what I might do over the next week is start listening to music of concerts that we've gone and see, you know, Van Morrison and
Roger Waters.
Roger Waters.
Yeah.
Elton John, people that we've seen over the years. But well, that's it. That's it. That's a wrap from Frank and Jan.
You betcha.
Okay. Thanks for walking down this windy road with us. We'll see you at the next bend.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.